This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, can Clemson get back to the top of the ACC this year? Which conference champions in college football have the best chance of repeating this season? And we'll also look at, we'll get to our Tuesday top 10, we'll look at the best divisions of quarterbacks over the years in the NFL. And the best divisions of football this year. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand, search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And you can always get in touch with the show online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page there, and you can leave a comment for the show. On Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Or join the conversation on the phones, 843-721-9500. Since I mentioned it yesterday, let me update that tomorrow we're going to try to catch up with the young girl that just graduated from NC State and won that cheese race in England over the weekend. I saw them talking about it on ESPN this morning. It's been all the rage. So she's actually now in Spain. She's been backpacking. So we're going to try to link up with her. Hopefully technology works out for us. And talk to her about it tomorrow. Go find the video yourself of that race in England that they hold every year of going after a thing of cheese going down the hill. And she happened to win. She's from North Carolina originally. And so looking forward to that conversation tomorrow. By the way, in a moment, I'll circle back to the NBA or just sports in general. And not just sports. I guess it's a good lesson for sports fans, but also in life as well, that not everybody, for better or worse, is treated the same. But I have this question, and Trent, I need your expert opinion on this.
Oh boy.
There was somebody who had a birthday recently. I failed to wish them a happy birthday on their birthday.
Okay.
I forgot. It slipped my mind. I didn't get around to the text. Just send the text message, right? Happy birthday. I said, oh, I got to text them. I forgot to come back and do it later in the day. Never wish them a happy birthday. Kept forgetting. Like, after it was on a Friday after the weekend, I thought, oh, shoot, I never said happy birthday. Let me do it.
Right.
Kept forgetting. Anyways, eventually, like 10 days later, I sent the birthday text. Now, my question would be, at a certain point, does it just become too late that you just forgot the birthday, ignore it? Or would you go with what I did 10 days later even, send the text, acknowledge, hey, missed your birthday, happy birthday, hope you're doing well. What would you do? Would you just completely ignore it? Or do you try to, like, cut your losses? Well, I don't know which one would be cutting your losses. Would you acknowledge it 2 weeks later and wish them a happy birthday?
Now, quick context. Is this a close friend? Like, how far away are we talking here? Like, how often do you two speak?
See, so this is good. That's why I intentionally left it out. I figured you would ask. It was my mother. No, I'm kidding. It wasn't my mother. No. But it was my cousin.
Ah, okay.
And now same age. It's the family that we're closest with in the family. I'll see her in a few weeks, actually. You know, so we're very close and everything, but it's one of my female cousin. She had a birthday a couple weeks ago. I texted her 10 days late. So it's a family member.
Right.
So that may give you a little more leeway. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's the context. It's a cousin that I forgot about 2 weeks.
So I would say that the birthday was on a Friday, you said? Okay, birthday on a Friday. Now, if it came to me, I definitely probably would have forgot. I forget birthdays all the time. But, Luke, what I do if I forget birthdays, I forget friends' birthdays. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me your birthday. I don't know. I don't really care. But, like, if it's your day, I guess. I don't really celebrate birthdays like that. But I always, if I forget one, always give a FaceTime call. I feel that's what I do. If I miss, like my buddy Sam Sloan lives up in Pittsburgh, missed his birthday. Very upset about it. Now, he missed my birthday as well, but he FaceTimed me the day after. I did the same thing, kind of felt, good feels to see their face, say, hey, I'm sorry, got super busy. How you doing? How was the birthday? So I would have said probably in that situation, Luke, potential phone call or FaceTime call to the person you forgot the birthday.
That's a classy move right there. A little FaceTime. I like that.
I like FaceTiming. If we're going to talk, I would rather, FaceTime you and see your face and see your emotions so I can get an actual read of what you're talking to me about.
All right, power rank. Phone calls, text messages, FaceTime.
Text is always at the top because it's the easiest, but I go FaceTime before I go phone call.
Interesting.
My family members might not enjoy it, but I always would prefer a FaceTime. Like, hey, no, let me see your face before we do anything else. Like, if I need to call my mom or something, quick, I'll give her a call. But if I just need to talk, I'm talking to somebody, I'd much rather FaceTime.
Oh, interesting. I sent off a text message. By the way, you mentioned that you missed his birthday, he missed your birthday.
Yeah.
I know people will keep track of holiday cards. And if they stop sending you a holiday card, you stop sending them. Now, with so much of the birthdays being done through text, you could go look at the text message. Do you keep track of if somebody didn't wish you a happy birthday? Do you not wish them a happy birthday?
No. Well, I've noticed it before because there's a certain person in my life who missed a birthday a couple years ago, but then has made up for it and has been actually the first person that has texted me on the birthdays. So no, I don't really keep tabs because like I've said, the birthdays to me are just woohoo. Yeah, we got another day. 21st was awesome. That was my last one, but that's the big one, right? Like you turn 21, it's cool. Now life kind of happens and starts. Go do your life. And the next one, 25, sweet, get a rent a car.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, that is the last birthday. It's 21. I mean, then you when you turn 30, when you turn for every 10 years, but really, I don't know if it's something that you really enjoy celebrating. It's just a big number. Like, my 40th birthday.
Yeah, you can throw a party, I feel on the 30, 40, 50. But if you're like, hey, this is my 27th, you want to throw a party? Get out of here.
No, I'm with you on the birthdays. Birthdays were never a big thing for me or we didn't really do huge. Every once in a while, for the special birthdays when you turn a certain age. And my parents would get me gifts and everything. I don't want to make it seem like I had some sort of terrible childhood. But birthdays, were just never a huge. Like, I've always come across other families or friends that turn it into a bigger deal, especially now as an adult. Like, it is what it is. You have to go to work.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's your birthday. Like, you got to go to work. Now, I did hear on our sister station on Fox Sports Radio, Covino and Rich, they were joking around giving their producer a hard time Sunday because he took his birthday off from work. And they were saying that's not a good enough excuse. I have no problem. I've worked on my birthday almost every year since becoming an adult. But I have no. If you take your birthday off, I have no problem.
Yeah, I was thinking about taking the 21st off, but I probably should have taken the day after off. That would have been the better solution there. But no, I've always worked on birthdays or gone to school on birthdays. Like it's never a big thing. Yeah, obviously, like you said, parents got gifts and everything, had a good time. Maybe have a party with your buddies or something like that. But that's just an excuse to have a party. Like that's it.
Yeah, when you're a kid, you have the parents throw the birthday parties. And then once I became a teenager, it was what it was. Like, you can maybe go to a movie with your buddies. Happy birthday. You're another year older.
Here's a gift card.
Yeah. the day after the birthday. I remember the day after my 21st birthday, I didn't get out of bed until 3 o'clock. Now, my parents threw the family party. Well, it wasn't even a family party, but we had some family over because we did a blowout for my 21st in the backyard. And so we had all sorts of leftovers and stuff. So family members came over the next day to celebrate my birthday. But it wasn't the wisest thing because it's the day after my 21st. And, that was a tough day. And I remember my mother kept coming in and saying, your family is outside. You got to come out and say hello. And I said, I am not getting out of this bed. And I remember watching the Red Sox get pounded by the Blue Jays. That made things worse. And eventually I made it outside to go see the family. But that was a tough day, the day after your 21st. So absolutely, take that day off. Don't take your birthday off. Take the next day off. That's a good idea.
Yeah, we had Citadel baseball after my 21st. So that was a fun 10 hours that we went through.
Can imagine, always a fun time. By the way, while we're on the subject of birthdays, and I did send the text, and it's fine. It's a cousin, right? Whatever. We're close. I'll see her in a couple of weeks. It's not a big deal.
It's different from a cousin than a best friend. I will say, if that's like your buddy
agree.
And you miss, no doubt.
And it also reminds me of Achilles Smith, we were going to have on a year ago. before the NFL draft, so over a year, and talk about what it was like, you know, as he was a big quarterback prospect, what it's like for those quarterbacks. And then when it came to having him on the show, we couldn't get him on the phone at our scheduled time, and he just totally went MIA, and I sent a text message. Mm. Akili Smith responded to that text message 2 weeks later, to the day, and responded as if nothing, like as if 2 weeks didn't just go by. And I talked about it on the air at the time, because same idea. Like, at that point, isn't it too, why are you responding 2 weeks later when you missed an interview? At that point, just like ignore it and forget or act like you never got that text.
Yeah, I'd much rather you ghost me there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
2 weeks later, I wake up to a text from Akili like, yeah, I could do it. I'm like, this is from 2 weeks ago. What are you talking about? So I thought that was similar with the birthday. And it was a bad job by me. I kept letting the days go by, kept forgetting, and eventually it was like 10 days later when I finally sent the text. And I felt bad, and I apologized, but it is what it is.
She responded, and she was cool?
Yeah, yeah. Responded the next day, though.
Ah.
I don't know.
And that's the funny thing about texting, right? If somebody responds the next day, it's like, it's 2022. You saw it. I know you saw it. Your phone was not off for 24 hours straight. You saw the text. Don't be a fool.
You are correct.
Yeah.
But I have always said this about, and I'm a good texter. I usually get right back to you. Sometimes I put it off for a few hours. If I'm watching a game or whatever, I'm distracted, I forget. And then when I sit down, I always go back and look. Because, look, I'm a millennial. I get a lot of text messages. It's what our generation does. So I'll sit down, like, at the end of the day or something and scroll. And did I miss any text? This is what I have to do. I get so many these group chats and everything. So sometimes I'm a little delayed in my response. But I've always said, in defense of slow texters, it's not instant messaging. Because people always complain, like, if you're in a relationship and they complain, like, you didn't text me back quick enough.
Yeah.
The original idea when text first started, and I remember because that's when I first got a cell phone, that people were not responding that very moment. You would send like a message just like, hey, don't forget, meeting tomorrow, whatever. Like that was the idea. Instead of the quick phone call, just send off a text. And then you didn't always have to respond. And now text has just become like you are in constant communication with people 24/7.
Yeah.
You're talking about how your day is going. Before it was just like if it was a too quick of a message to call somebody, just send off that text. They wouldn't even have to respond to it. So I've always defended the slow texters that it's not some sort of, you're not on AIM like back in the day, instant messaging. It's a text, and they'll get back to you whenever they get back to you. Now, with that said, I do get pretty impatient if I send off a text and I'm waiting for an answer and somebody doesn't text me back for a while, and I'm usually a pretty quick texter. But in defense, when people say, like, you didn't text me back fast enough, I always say, well, you know, it's not designed to be instant messaging. We're not on AIM or something. Right? You send a text, and then the person texts you back when they text you back. So be it. But, yeah, she texted me back the next day, so maybe that was a bad sign. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it happens sometimes. I'll forget to text back all the time. All the time. You just put your phone down, do something else, and then boom, me. You know, it's 2 hours gone by.
I'm a night person, so my buddies always give me a hard time because I'll be like, you know, I'll text them back or something like 2 a.m. And they're always like, what are you doing up? I don't know. It's a blessing and a curse. I can't go to bed early. That's when I catch up on my texts. Last thing I'll say on the birthdays, because I noticed this over the weekend. I can't stand. If you want to take your day off on a birthday, no problem. I cannot stand the people. And again, this is going to be like the fourth Office reference of the day. But when Michael Scott, remember in the episode, he calls, is it Jan or somebody, and he wishes them a happy birthday?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they say, it's not my birthday. And he said, oh, I thought we had the same birthday. And it's his way of getting them to know that it's his birthday, which is actually pretty, it's such a corny move, but it's kind of clever.
Pretty wise.
I saw somebody in sports media over the weekend tweet out a photo of them, I think something with Michael Jordan. And they said, hard to believe this was 30 years ago, which means that I'm 30 years old today, something along those lines.
Wow.
And I saw at least two, maybe three tweets over the weekend of people like blue check marks, not a random Joe on Twitter, but like people that are in sports media doing something along those lines. Like, wow, this was 30 years ago. Hard to believe I'm already 30. Don't acknowledge your own birthday in a public forum like that when we know what you're doing. You're just waiting for people to then tweet at you and say, oh, happy birthday.
Yeah, you want the engagement on the tweet.
Don't. You cannot point out, just like you can't create your own nickname, you can't point out your own birthday. You can't do it. If people don't know it's your birthday, so be it. Sorry, you're not going to get a lot of birthday wishes. Don't put that out there on your own. That's the last thing I'll say on birthdays. Hey, we opened up the show this afternoon to talk about Draymond Green. And this has become a big story. I can rant about the birthday thing all I want, but this is another one, too, that I ranted about earlier a little bit because I did not get the conversation over the last about 36 hours when people are saying, how did Draymond Green not get a second technical and thrown out of that game the other night, game two of the NBA Finals? But it's almost like being, I don't know, insincere. We're not being honest here. If you're a sports fan, you know that players play by different rules, whether it's the way they're officiated in baseball, the way they're umpired, or even just in terms of like a locker room, the way they're handled. The quarterback of a football team can get away with a lot more than the 53rd guy on that NFL roster. In fact, there are quarterbacks like Brett Favre. His final years in Green Bay had his own locker room. Why? Because he's Brett Favre. Do you think they're giving the rookies their own locker room? No, but Favre had his own room that was just for him that he would go into, and he'd have some downtime and he could change. And the other players in the locker room may say, well, that's not fair. How come Brett gets his own locker room? The rest of us, we all have to shower together and we're all, you know, we have no room. We're all bunched up together. And it's because Brett Favre has built up enough cachet with the Packers and have been there for 15 years that he earned that right. The other players, at least most of them, did not. You can make the case like an offensive lineman that was there for a long time, or, you know, a wide receiver, whoever, another position. They've been there. They're very good. They should, but the quarterback, we know, is so important. And so it's similar in all sports. But in this case, in basketball with Draymond Green, that he does get officiated differently. Now, he gets that first technical, but in order to get the second one, you really have to go over the edge, especially in an NBA finals game. Because the last thing you want to do if you're an official is influence the game by removing a very important player. Just like star basketball players rarely, if ever, foul out of playoff games. You don't want it to happen. You don't even want to put them in foul trouble and have to put them on the bench. How often do you watch an NBA playoff game and one of the stars actually gets like three or four fouls? It doesn't happen. You don't want to put them in foul trouble in the first half and have them have to sit. You don't want to foul them out in the fourth quarter, and you don't want to kick out Draymond Green in the first half. And for all those, the talking heads over the last 36 hours that have turned this into a talking point and have pondered, how did you not throw out Draymond Green? What does this talk about officiating him differently? You're being inauthentic, or you just don't know how it works, because this is how it's always worked in sports and in life. Same idea with at your job, right? You may have the same job as somebody. You may have the same role. You may work the same hours, but I'm sure there's certain things that they get away with that maybe you don't. Maybe they're more successful. They have more sales than you. Who knows? So the boss lets them take a little more time off, or they're not breathing over their shoulder, wondering like where they are. How come they're not in their office? They can have a longer lunch. They could come in late. They could take the kid to the dentist during work hours. It's okay because they get the job done, and they're bringing in more sales. So the boss gives them a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt. Draymond Green has built up a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt than, say, a rookie or just a role player or the eighth guy off the bench. Greg Maddux used to get the borderline pitches. So, too, did Derek Jeter at the plate. Right? The longer you're in the league, the more calls you get, that star treatment you get as an athlete in any sport, or really as most people. I wouldn't say anybody, but most people in all walks of life, whatever your industry is. And the classic story they always tell is about Jimmy Johnson, right? He once released a player who fell asleep in a meeting for the Cowboys. And to paraphrase the whole story, they asked him, like, what if that was Emmitt Smith or, you know, or Troy Aikman? And he said, I wake him up. That's just how it works. When it's a rookie falling asleep, yeah, he's expendable. He's cut. Troy Aikman's nodding off. Well, you bend the rules a little bit. Hey, somebody wake up Troy. And he fell asleep in the meeting. Wake up Troy. Make sure he's paying attention. But you're not going to release him. Just like Draymond does something in that game, too, you're not going to give him a second technical and throw him out. But if it's done by, I don't know, Grant Williams on the other side, yeah, you'd be a little more prone to give him a second technical and throw him out. You do not want to influence a finals game on a call like that. And it's been happening for decades in all sports. And it happens in life, too. Right? Life isn't fair. Not everybody is, fortunately, or I should say unfortunately, for better or worse, right? Not everybody's treated the same way in any sort of industry, job, just your day-to-day life. Different people get the – it's the classic I've been referencing The Office all day, so let me do Seinfeld, right? When they're waiting for a table at the Chinese restaurant, and one of the regulars walks in, and they have a table right there for him. And they say, what are you talking about? We've been here longer. And the hostess says, no, that's whatever his name is. He's there. He's here all the time. Right? And Elaine says, what do you mean he's here all the time? But he's a regular. He's got his table reserved for him in the back. You ever go to a busy restaurant, you're waiting, or you're waiting outside of a nightclub, right? And somebody just skips the line and they let them in, especially if that person's like a celebrity. That's just how it goes. the longer you do something or the more power you build or the more successful you are, the more of a benefit of the doubt you're given or the more you can get away with, and that's the case here. Draymond Green has built up enough over the years that he can get away with some things to keep him from getting thrown out in a finals game. That's just how it works in sports and, unfortunately, in a lot of ways in life as well. A lot of famous, rich celebrities get off from doing bad things, too, because of who they are. And on a much lesser level, Draymond Green gets away with doing some things in a basketball game because of, who he is. You're not going to kick him out of the NBA Finals. When we come back, can Clemson get back to the top of the ACC, and which teams in college football have the best chance of repeating as conference champions? It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Ben, lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
And I decided quickly, yes I did, to disco down and check out the show. Yeah, they were dancing and singing and moving to the grooving. And just when it hit me, somebody turned around and shouted, play that fucking music, white boy. Play that fucking music, right. Play that fucking music, white boy. Lay down the boogie and play that funky music till you die. Till you die? Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Rather just jam out instead. But coming up, let's talk about Clemson trying to get back to the top of the ACC and which conference champions have the best chance of repeating this year in college football amongst the Power Five. Get to that in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show. ESPN.com, you can find this if you're an insider or whatever they call it, ESPN Plus. If you have that paid subscription, you can get this on ESPN.com. Bill Connolly, who we've had on the show before, does what they call the SP Plus. It's an analytical breakdown of all the college football teams. And so for today, he was looking at the ACC, and specifically the division in which Clemson's in. Now, he does have, based off of his numbers, Clemson winning the conference this year and being the best team in the conference. He has Clemson as the number two defense in all of college football and number 39 in offense. He also has Clemson as just the number six team overall in college football. The next closest is NC State, the 18th best team in college football. Here's what I find interesting, though, is that all sounds good, right? Clemson wins the division. They're the sixth best team in college football, second best defense, even the offense. If they have a top 40 offense, that'd be a big upgrade over a year ago. 100% chance of making a bowl game. That all sounds good. And then I saw maybe the most important numbers, and that was the win projections. And these numbers have Clemson winning 9 games this year and 6 in the conference. So that would be, 6-2 in the conference. And then that would also tell you that they would lose a non-conference game, right? Which I would imagine would probably be Notre Dame based off of these numbers. Sorry, Gamecock fans. But overall would have Clemson based off of these projections. And this is just one source. But how Bill Connolly and his numbers view it, he has Clemson at 9-3 this year. And if this counts the conference championship, I don't know, right? Then you would say 9-4. You play a 13th game. I assume this is just regular season. 9-3. Obviously would not be good enough for Clemson and the aspirations. Would not be good enough, you would assume, to get back to the college football playoff. And so that, to me, is surprising. Now, you want to talk about two conference losses. Where could those come from? Well, I gave you what I thought is the toughest stretch on the show yesterday, and that's right away to begin the full conference schedule at the end of September, where you go to Wake Forest, you get NC State at home, and then you go to Boston College. I could see where maybe one of those three is a loss. And then you have Miami towards the end of the year, but at least it is at home. I mean, those are probably the only ones, unless there's a real surprise. Somehow Georgia Tech sneaks up on you week one. As I always say, it's a cliche around here, but it's true. Week one's the biggest toss-up. I don't know. Could Florida State beat Clemson in Tallahassee? I wouldn't bet on it. All right, Syracuse, I don't think so. But just based off of Connolly's projection, again, it's just one source. But he has Clemson losing two conference games and going just 9-3 overall, which I would view as a disappointment. His biggest questions for the ACC, number one, he said, will promoting from within fix the Clemson offense? Yeah, that is a huge question. Just the Clemson offense in general, will it be better this year? Most notably the quarterback. And I find the second question also interesting, where he asked, does NC State live up to the hype? Maybe I'm falling into this trap because I'm buying into the hype of NC State. I'm jumping on this bandwagon. And I'm very intrigued by NC State this year. I do think they're the second best team behind Clemson. And then in terms of players to watch, he has Sam Hartman, top 10 players to watch. Sam Hartman, number one. Malik Cunningham, number two. So those are the two quarterbacks in the top 10. Only defensive linemen for Clemson are in the top 10. Will Shipley's number 12, their running back. Now, that's just, again, one breakdown of the ACC. But I was also thinking about looking at last year's conference champions. Which of these teams have the best chance at repeating? Now, if we focus in on the ACC, of course, it was Pittsburgh beating Wake Forest. And then just to refresh your mind on the other conferences, Michigan beat Iowa in the Big Ten. Baylor beat Oklahoma State in the Big 12. Just looking at Power 5 conferences, Utah beat Oregon in the Pac-12. And don't forget, even though Georgia won the national championship, who won the SEC? It was Alabama. Alabama beat Georgia by 17 in the SEC title game, which, if you're an SEC fan, a Georgia fan, I'm sure you remember very well. And that's the big storyline, is that Georgia then avenged that loss in the national title game. But I do think it's easy to slip your mind that, oh, yeah, actually Alabama won the SEC. They didn't win the national championship, but they did win the SEC. So take those five teams that won, Pittsburgh, Michigan, Baylor, Utah, Alabama, and let's rank them for which team has the best chance of repeating as conference champion this year. I think number one on my list is certainly Alabama. I'll take my chances. I think the team that has the best opportunity to repeat this year is Alabama to win the SEC once again. I think it comes down to Alabama and Georgia, and even though Georgia just won, sorry, Georgia fans, I still give Saban and Alabama the benefit of the doubt before I give Kirby and Georgia, even though they just won the national championship. I think Alabama's the team to beat in the SEC this year. Georgia lost, what, 15 guys? A lot of pieces on that defense. I go with Alabama number one. Number two, I would say Utah. And I talked about this on the show yesterday when we were trying to predict which of the teams that have win totals under 8.5 could win their conferences, as so many did a year ago. I think Utah's the best team in the Pac-12. I know USC is favored. I think that's more of a storyline. And you have to be careful, too, where people can hear what they want to hear. So when I say, like, oh, USC's not going to win the conference, or USC's not going to be as good as anticipated, you may take that as I'm down on USC, as I think USC's going to have a bad year. No, I don't. I think USC's going to be good. I think they're going to be a lot better than last year. Last year they won four games. I think they win at least twice as many this year. I think they win 8, 9. Maybe they get to 10. But I don't think they're the best team in the conference. And I think USC having the best odds is just more of that storyline of kind of buying into that hype, maybe like an NC State. Although you can understand why there's more hype around USC. You bring in a Lincoln Riley, you bring in a Caleb Williams, all these other transfers. You bring in Dye from Oregon, you bring in the wide receiver from Pittsburgh. Right? You bring in a lot of guys. And it's a wide-open conference. But I really like Utah. And Kyle Whittingham has been there longer, and they're bringing back a lot of pieces where USC is like trying to put that puzzle together on the fly. You know, like up against a deadline. Utah, that puzzle's been together. So the big question for me is USC, a lot of moving pieces. How quickly can they come together and gel compared to a very experienced Utah program with a coach and a staff that's been there for a while that they just won the conference last year? They're bringing back a lot of pieces. I think Utah's the team to beat in the Pac-12. I put them number two. Baylor, I'll put at number three. We talked about the Big 12 for a moment yesterday in the sense that nobody has a win total in Vegas over 8.5. So in the eyes of Vegas, this conference is the most wide open amongst Power 5. Now, last year, it was Baylor and Oklahoma State in the conference title game. I'm going to go chalk and say those are the two favorites along with Oklahoma and Venables. Oklahoma's always in the conversation. Oklahoma State, I thought, overachieved last year because Mike Gundy's an offensive guy, and yet it was all about their defense a year ago. And the Big 12, credit to them, for the first time in a long time, they were like a defensive conference last year. I don't know if I can count on that to continue for Oklahoma State. And don't forget, Gundy was on the hot seat going into the year. That was a big surprise. That was more of a surprise than Baylor and Dave Aranda. Both were surprising. I think Oklahoma State was a bigger surprise. And I won't say they were fraudulent, but I just liked when I watched those two teams, and then Baylor beat Oklahoma State in the conference championship. If I remember correctly, I think I took Baylor. I just liked Baylor more, and I like them more this year. And Oklahoma will be right there in the mix, but I have questions about Venables in year one. In that, you know, as a head coach, there's just a lot of questions there at Oklahoma. So I'll put Baylor third. If I had to pick a favorite in that conference, I think I'd probably pick Baylor. I don't feel great about it. It's a wide-open conference. But if I had to choose one team, I think I'd go with Dave Aranda. He may be the best coach in the conference. And then number four, as we're power-ranking defending conference champions, I think I go Michigan at four. Now, I'm low on Michigan this year, but you got to put somebody four. By the process of elimination, that lets you know I put Pittsburgh five. And maybe I should actually swap these, but I'm going to go Michigan four, Pittsburgh five. And I'm low on Michigan because I keep comparing them to Florida from a year ago. And I see a lot of similarities. They surprised a lot of people, right? Florida made it to the SEC title game. They didn't win, but they got there. Michigan, they beat Ohio State. They got to the Big Ten title game. They did win. They got to the playoff for the first time. And Harbaugh seemed to be a little, maybe not quite as much as Dan Mullen, but both guys got a little big for their britches in the offseason. Maybe a little overconfident. Harbaugh thought he was on his way back to the NFL. Lost both coordinators. Lost their two best defensive players, which were a huge reason for their success a year ago. So I think Michigan and Ohio State, I think, will be better this year. I think Ohio State's the team to beat. So I think Michigan could take a step back. Maybe not as bad as Florida, right? Dan Mullen got fired during the season. I don't think Michigan will be that bad. But I think they're going to go from a playoff team to this year. I wouldn't be surprised if they win only, say, eight and four. And after winning the conference and making it to the playoff a year ago, I think that's a pretty big step back. I could see that for Michigan this year. And Ohio State will be the heavy favorite. I mean, they are the heavy favorite. And then lastly, with the ACC and Pittsburgh, the big question for Pittsburgh to answer, and I've asked this throughout the offseason, and we don't have an answer yet. We could give our best guesses, but was that more about Pittsburgh or Kenny Pickett? Was Pittsburgh more beneficial to Kenny Pickett or vice versa? Like, who was the big winner in that relationship? And we talk about a lot in sports, like, who's going to win the divorce? This wasn't necessarily a divorce. Things didn't end poorly. Kenny Pickett had to go on to the NFL. But we're going to look back, and we're going to find out real quick. Like, was it Pittsburgh making Kenny Pickett the quarterback he was, or was Kenny Pickett making Pittsburgh the team they were a year ago? And I think it has more to do with Kenny Pickett than it does the surrounding parts, because that was the outlier last year. Pittsburgh had not played like that until a year ago. Now, you could tell me that, well, finally, things came together, and Pat Narduzzi figured it out. And they did have a good defense. They've always had a good defense under Narduzzi. But I think that's more about Kenny Pickett. And Kenny Pickett, he was drafted higher than Dan Marino. He's the highest drafted quarterback out of Pittsburgh. So not often does Pittsburgh develop quarterbacks. Kenny Pickett broke Marino's record. Like, that was a once-in-a-lifetime type of deal. That's going to be hard to replace. And when you look at the ACC, I'm higher on NC State this year than Pittsburgh. I would be higher on even Miami. I'd give a better chance than Pittsburgh. Obviously, Clemson. And if you want to look at teams in the conference championship last year, Wake Forest is bringing their quarterback back. Maybe they have a better chance this year than Pittsburgh. And not only did Pittsburgh lose their quarterback, they lost the offensive coordinator who was behind that offense. So it's not so much like a system, like a Kyle Shanahan system that you could just plug and play. No, there's going to be a new offense this year and a new quarterback. So you're not going to have Kenny Pickett or the offense that he was so good in that you feel like, well, we'll just bring in another quarterback. And, you know, it was more about the offense why Kenny Pickett was so good. Well, you lost the offense. He's gone. So you lost the system and the quarterback. And I think that's a lot to try to replace for Pittsburgh. So to recap, how I would power rank last year's conference champions in terms of the best chance to repeat this year, Alabama, to me, clear number one. I would pick them to win the SEC. Utah, number two, I would pick them to win the Pac-12. Then the rest of the way, Baylor would be my pick. I put them third, but I don't feel so good about it. Michigan, I do not think wins the Big Ten. They're fourth on my list. Pittsburgh, I do not think wins the ACC this year. They would be fifth on my list. And that's how I look at those teams. The ACC, much like the Big 12, is open. Clemson's the favorite in Vegas, but I still have plenty of questions about those Clemson Tigers when it comes to the ACC. And I do find it interesting. Today's article from Bill Connelly was focusing mostly on Clemson and their division of the ACC. And while he has them getting to the ACC title game, he has them getting there with two conference losses and a 9-3 regular season record overall. And I think if Clemson goes 9-3 this year, I think that's another disappointment. And you miss the playoff once again, and that probably means that DJ or the offense wasn't good enough, and there's going to be a lot of questions about at least the offense and the program if that's the case again. If they just go 9-3, miss the playoffs, and for the second straight, don't meet those expectations, then you really start to wonder about the immediate success of that program. When we come back, we'll get to our Tuesday Top 10 and look at some of the best divisions we've had over the years for quarterbacks, because I think we may have the best one this year. And we'll do that next. It's the Moore Midday Show. right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio. With some of the guys you knew before, between the two of us guys, you know I love you more. It took me by surprise, I must say, when I found out yesterday. Don't you know that I heard through the grapevine, not much longer would you be mine. Oh, I heard through the grapevine. Oh, I'm just about to lose my mind. Honey, honey, well,
it's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. The best divisions we've had for quarterbacks. We'll look at that in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show, because this year, I think this is the best. Now, we've said this like three straight years, and it shows how much better the quarterback position is becoming. But we always say, like, I think this is the best division that we've had for quarterbacks. I think this year really will be the year. You have Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Russell Wilson, and Derek Carr. Mahomes is certainly on his way to be a Hall of Famer. I think Russell Wilson is a Hall of Famer. And Justin Herbert, it's so early on, but he has the ability that if he has a certain career, I think he'll be a Hall of Famer. I hear Colin Cowherd saying that Derek Carr is a Hall of Famer. I don't think so, but I think you could get three Hall of Fame quarterbacks in this division. You look back to when Brady first arrived in Tampa, and you had, you know, Brady, Drew Brees, Matt Ryan. People debate if he's a Hall of Famer or not. And then even Teddy Bridgewater is not a bad fourth option. I think this fourth option, Derek Carr, is better than that fourth option. Carr versus Teddy. We've had some pretty good divisions in recent years. So anyways, I think this year will be the best, at least on paper, with those four in the AFC West. And what a fun time that division should be this year. So we do a top 10 list every week. Now, I'll admit, this is going to be just a lot of names. So it may play better for like a visual, a TV, than, say, radio, because I'm just going to run through a bunch of names, and you're going to have to try to keep up. But I figured let's look back at the 10 best quarterback groups in divisions in NFL history. Not necessarily all four. It's hard to find a division that had four really good quarterbacks, but there's plenty of duos or even trios that were playing in the same division at the same time. So with that said, it's this week's Tuesday Top 10. It is the 10 best quarterback divisions we've had over the years in the NFL.
Time for the Tuesday Top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
Always interested. All right. Number 10, I would say if you go back 40 years, Terry Bradshaw and Kenny Stabler were in the same division. And then you had Ken Anderson as well, who had a couple of good years there and won an MVP at one point. I think that starts the list at number 10. And this can be a little difficult to organize as well. But I start there at number 10. Number 9, I'll say Marino, Peyton Manning, and then you had Doug Flutie, Rob Johnson. But you had Peyton Manning and Dan Marino in the same division. Now, the reason why this is not towards the top of the list is because this was Marino at the end of his career. And you may forget that the Colts, right back when we didn't have the divisions we have today, and you had like a Central, and it had teams all over the place. And so you had the Colts and the Dolphins together, and you had those two playing with one another. And then you get to number 8 would be, I would probably say Favre and Warren Moon, when they were playing together in the aforementioned Central at the time. You had Favre with the Packers, Warren Moon with the Vikings towards the end of his career, and then you even had the Lions had like an Eric Kramer, and then you had like a Scott Mitchell mixed in there. And I know it's because of Barry Sanders, but the Lions were actually making the playoffs from time to time with those quarterbacks. And then you also had Trent Dilfer was with the Buccaneers, and he was a big prospect, even though he didn't quite pan out. But that was a pretty good combination as well. And there's so many to choose from here, as I'm realizing, looking through my long list of different guys. Number 7, I go Elway, Montana. It was both guys towards the end of their careers. This was when Montana was with the Chiefs. So he wasn't quite the same quarterback. But you had Elway, you had Montana. This was early to mid-90s. And then you had, like, Stan Humphries. Right? The rest of the division wasn't all that good. But, boy, those guys, they were pretty good. Just to have those two. Those are two pretty good names. As we head towards the top six, my top five I feel pretty good about. Number six, I would slot in. I'd probably go Bob Greasy. And, nope, hold on. I'm getting ahead of myself. That's in the top five. I would go Dan Fouts and Kenny Stabler back in the 70s. And then you also had, in that group, you had Len Dawson, too. Now, Dawson, at this point in his career, he was on his way to the Hall of Fame, but he was at the end of his career, which is why I only put it at that spot. Then you also have Terry Bradshaw, Ken Stabler, and Ken Anderson as well. You have, as we get into the top five, I think this is a pretty good underrated group from a decade ago in the NFC North. But Brett Favre, when he was with the Vikings, Aaron Rodgers taking his spot, and then you also have Jay Cutler, I think kind of underrated, never was a winner, but talented quarterback, and you had Matt Stafford for the Lions, who has now won a Super Bowl at the Rams. I think that's a pretty good division from just over a decade ago. That was when Favre was in Minnesota, so 2009-2010. Favre, Rodgers, Cutler, Stafford. Pretty good. Then you get towards the top four, where I would say Greasy, Unitas, and Namath. Now, at this point of his career, Joe Namath was a little banged up, wasn't playing quite as much. But think back, and it was different. We didn't have as many divisions and such. But there was a time when those guys were all playing in the same division. Greasy, Unitas, and Namath. Three Hall of Fame talents and three of the better quarterbacks of all time. That one probably should be third, but I'm going to go with what I mentioned a few moments ago about the NFC South, where you give me Tom Brady and Drew Brees, two of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time, and then Matt Ryan third, and unfortunately dragging it down will be Teddy Bridgewater, but we're not focusing on the full four. And then I would say my top two quarterback combinations in divisions. Number two would be Marino and Jim Kelly. And then you also had Bledsoe, Drew Bledsoe for the Patriots. And remember, Bledsoe at one point became the highest paid quarterback in the league. Bledsoe now becomes a talking point just as the guy that Tom Brady replaced. But before anybody knew who Tom Brady was, you thought Bledsoe was the guy in New England. And he brought him to a Super Bowl. So you have Marino, Jim Kelly, two of the greatest quarterbacks, especially Dan Marino. You had Drew Bledsoe. And then as a fourth option, you had Boomer Esiason, who was an MVP quarterback. Now, at this point, Boomer is towards the end of his career playing for the Jets, but he was an MVP in the 80s with the Bengals, got them to the Super Bowl. That's a pretty good four. And I think because of that fourth quarterback of Boomer Esiason and even Drew Bledsoe, I think that fares better than a Matt Ryan and a Teddy Bridgewater. You could say Boomer's pretty similar to Matt Ryan. Both won an MVP, both got to a Super Bowl, and they were that quarterback that was, Boomer's not in the Hall of Fame. Matt Ryan, I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer. But they're quarterbacks you could at least debate about. And then that fourth quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater versus Drew Bledsoe, I think Bledsoe was a better quarterback than Teddy Bridgewater. Maybe if Bridgewater didn't get hurt, he could be in similar company. But Bledsoe, that dude, he had a great arm. I mean, you look at those quarterbacks, Marino, Kelly, Bledsoe, and Boomer. Those are some good arm talents playing in that eastern part of the AFC that was the early to mid-90s. And then number one, though, I would say, number one for me, the best quarterback combination, and we didn't get it very long, because this was right when they switched to the divisions we have now. But there was a period of time when you had Brady and Manning in the same division in 2001 in the AFC East. And Brady wasn't really Brady yet, and even Peyton was still very early on in his career. And then you change things. The Colts moved to the Colts are in what, the South of the AFC, so things change. But you had Brady, you had Peyton Manning, and then you also had, as a third option, Vinny Testaverde, not terrible, played in the league for about 20 years, former top pick. And then Jay Fiedler was the quarterback of the Dolphins, so that kind of drags it down. But just the fact that you had Brady and Manning in the same division, and again, it was before we knew what both those guys would become, but those are two of the best. Maybe if you're of a certain age, they are the two best quarterbacks you've seen. And they did play in the same division with one another for a very small amount of time. It's not a perfect list. It's hard to kind of set, one division had four good guys, another maybe only had two, but the two were very good. It's hard to try to stack them up and weigh one another. So it's a little, just crazy to try to organize. But that's how I would view at least some of the top divisions we've had for quarterbacks. And the point of all this being that I think this year the AFC West very well could be as of now, until the next one comes along, the best division of quarterbacks we've had overall. As far as a top two punch goes, yeah, it's tough to beat Manning and Brady. It's tough to beat Marino and Kelly. But maybe we'll look back and say, wow, Mahomes and Justin Herbert, or even just Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes. It's a pretty good group of quarterbacks in the AFC West. We'll wrap up your Tuesday when we come back. It's the More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
I'm wondering if your love's still strong. Ooh, baby. Here I am, signed, sealed, delivered. I'm yours. Then that time I went and said goodbye. Now I'm back and not ashamed to cry. Ooh, baby. Here I am, signed, sealed, delivered. I'm yours.
Wrapping up your Tuesday on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, just catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. Plus, the podcasts are usually available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. There was some sort of issue, so the last couple weeks the podcasts have not been up there, but we believe we have it figured out. So they'll be back up there moving forward, if that was another way you would ever get to the podcast. charlestonsportsradio.com, just click on our show page. While you're there, you can always take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Plus, through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Download the free app today, ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and that allows you to listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 9 different states and multiple countries on this Tuesday. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk more about the LIV Golf Tour and the drama there with Jeremy Schilling, as we do every Wednesdays. Every Wednesday, I guess. And also, we'll talk about tumbling down a hill to try to get a piece of cheese with the winner of the cheese race from England over the weekend, who is scheduled to join us tomorrow on the show as well. Looking forward to that. I find that whole thing fascinating. But in the meantime, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.